VentureCast.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
There's a change happening in the way we live, the way we work, the way we spend our money and make our decisions. We are evolving to be more conscious in our actions in a way that serves the world and makes it a better place. Welcome to The Ethical Evolution. The Ethical Evolution podcast is brought to you by Ethical Change Agency. I'm Bindi, I'm the founder, and my mission is to help ethical entrepreneurs and holistic healers to find their voice through spiritual coaching and podcasting. I'm honored to bring you the stories of those who create change through healing, kindness, innovation, purpose, and spirit. Understanding that to create collective change, we need to be the change. It all begins with us. Jahan Hamsazadeh completed his dissertation on psychedelics in the Philosophy, Cosmology and Consciousness program at the California Institute of Integral Studies. His book, The Psilocybin Connection, Psychedelics, the Transformation of Consciousness and Evolution of the Planet, an Integral Approach, was published last year. Jahan works with psychedelic-assisted psychotherapy and as a psychedelic guide using legal psilocybin mushrooms in ceremonies in Jamaica. Psychedelics are becoming popular and more widely accepted around the world and can provide life-changing outcomes for those who embrace them in therapy-based applications. I hope you let your curiosity wander in this insightful conversation with Jahan. Welcome, Jahan, to The Ethical Evolution.
Perfect. Thank you, Bindi. It's a pleasure and honor to be here.
Now, for those who haven't heard of you, can you tell us who you are and what you do?
Yeah, name's Jahan Hamsazadeh. I got my doctorate at the California Institute of Integral Studies. My focus of the dissertation was on psychedelics, specifically psilocybin and evolution. It came out as a book in 2022 titled The Psilocybin Connection, Psychedelics, the Transformation of Consciousness and Evolution on the Planet, an Integral Approach. Something really nice that's just resonant of this week. This last Sunday, the New York Times recommended my book. So it was really nice to see that getting out there to that degree. I've been holding space for psychedelic ceremonies for many years now. I've been either helped of or been part of six different psychedelic guide or sitter trainings. And I do this work legally in Jamaica with Atman Retreats. So it's pretty much encompass my full life now. It's been interest for 20 years, but it's been more full-time professional for about the last five.
Amazing. And there's so much to unpack when we talk about psychedelics and in particular psilocybin. So let's just start with, psychedelics in general. I mean, they've got a bit of a reputation, way back from the 70s. Nowadays, it's much more sophisticated and there's a lot more science and medicine behind it. This is a whole new age of medicine that can really help people, can't it?
Yeah, it's a whole new age of medicine that can treat such a variety of illnesses, but then also help people that are just already healthy. So we know it's already proven through just constant scientific, experiments that it helps with OCD, PTSD, addiction, treatment-resistant depression, anxiety, also in year of end-of-life anxiety. And we also know it catalyzes mystical experience in 65% of participants the right side and setting. So it definitely helps heal the parts of our psyches that feel fragmented, But it also helps us, I would say, even evolve forward in many ways to become more ethical, more courageous, stimulates neurogenesis, the growth of new neurons, so the brain physically begins to grow. I think it just makes us better humans all around.
Mm. Yeah. And, you know, in the media, particularly in movies and things like that, we see it quite a bit around ayahuasca. Have you done much work with that?
Yeah, I've done this part only about 10 ceremonies, but 8 of those were just this last year with the Santo Daime Church. It's a beautiful compound. I mean, it uses DMT, but it's mixed with, I believe, harmaline to make it last a lot longer. And DMT, which is the active ingredient in ayahuasca, and psilocybin are very similar to both tryptamines. And so psilocybin is DMT with a few more atoms added onto it. So even though there's differences within all the tryptamines, this group of compounds that includes others like LSD, there's more similarity than differences. They kind of lead to the same insights, but it's different flavors of getting to these kind of same insights and kind of growth-oriented experiences.
Mm, and there's that level of consciousness that you can reach with dosages of things like ayahuasca that we normally wouldn't get. Like, what kind of, you know, insights do people get in those moments?
Yeah, I mean, I feel there's certain universal insights that are cross-cultural as a part of, you could say, our soul or collective, you know, consciousness. And it's the same insights people reach, you could say, through meditation. You know, there's Aldous Huxley put forward the perennial philosophy, you know, kind of really breaking down that across all mystical traditions, if people really stay with the kind of practice, meditation, tantra, breath work, that we can realize either that we're all one, that we're loved, they're interconnected, that we're eternal to some degree. The difference between those practices, which are amazing, and psychedelics, is this really gets there faster. I mean, there's a chance that you can get there within 6 hours as opposed to hundreds or thousands of hours of training, you know? But once you have the taste that these things are real and these insights are real, a lot of people actually begin to devote themselves to spiritual practices. So they're amazing catalysts. This being said, you know, your question about these actual experiences, I think there's certain experiences that we can't have without them because our brain literally has a new compound in it that it doesn't otherwise. And so if I look at something like ketamine, which is another amazing psychedelic, there's states that gets to you. There's flavors of consciousness that we cannot reach otherwise. You know, so as we introduce all these new compounds, and there's hundreds of psychedelics and most of them very safe, there's no biotoxicity, I think it really allows us to step into like a whole new kind of portal or doorway to expand more of our depths of humanity.
Mm, that's incredible. And I love what you said there, the flavors of consciousness. Like, you know, do you find that the different psychedelics have mm-hmm. different outcomes for people, like as in their experience? Like, is it vastly different, even though it's the same kind of chemical compound? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, it is. It's fairly infinite in terms of the types of experiences you can have. I think the deepest experience you can have across the board is that of unity. You know, it's hard to even conceptually think of a larger experience because we're saying you're feeling one with the entire cosmos of the universe, right? And so that's a very large statement to make it. Again, it's hard to even think of something that's even would peak this. That being said, there's infinite ways to experience unity. The universe is that big. You know, like there's like infinite ways to experience a human life, but they're the same flavor of experience, a state of oneness. So you can have oneness with yourself, one with the environment, one with a partner, one with the planet, one with the cosmos, or one just with a deity like God, you know? So there's many ways. And there's so each time you go in, you learn a new nuance, a subtle differences, but it's the same kind of structure of the universe that you're coming in contact with.
Mm. Yeah, that makes sense. And I guess, you know, what's your thoughts for people who, you know, no doubt there's some people in the community who are against psychedelics. And, you know, what's your thoughts when they come to you and say, look, you know, people get addicted on this stuff? Like, what are you doing?
Yeah, no, I love that question. And I think a lot of us kind of assume that there's people against it. And something that was really interesting is Michael Pollan, he wrote this 2018 bestseller called How to Change Your Mind. And he'd already had 5 bestsellers on food and plants before. So he had quite a wider audience. And when he came out with this research on psychedelics, he thought he was going to get this large level of oppositions, including from psychiatrists, legal oppositions, from therapists, all these things. And he's surprised he got none. And what he came to find is that everybody's actually on board. Like, we have now decades of science that is so rooted, and the outcomes are uncomparable to any other method. You know, it's a big statement to make, but they are. So 80% successful for treatment-resistant depression. These are people that have been depressed sometimes for 10 to 20 years and have already tried all the other methods, all the medications, all the therapies, nothing works, are still suicidal and depressed. And 80% of those people heal. We don't have numbers like this. And with the growing anxiety and depression rates and suicide rates, like, we know there's a mental health crisis that's looming around the world. And so nobody's actually against it. You know, here in the US, both political sides are for it. The only difference is people want it to be done safely. That's the thing that we can all kind of agree on. So it's a very tedious process to create the protocols, the clinics, the laws, the frameworks for them to be safe. That being said, yes, I'm sure there exist outliers that are against it, but so much of it just comes down to either misinformation or lack of education. You know, it really just, like, if they see just one documentary saying all the science and how many lives it shifts, you know, I've seen them with my parents, you know, like, people begin to switch over, you know. And what what I'm curious about is, you know, maybe religious fundamentalists later, but there hasn't been any opposition. There hasn't been any actual opposition to this movement so far, which is amazing to know.
And, you know, it's becoming a more mainstream, acceptable kind of practice. I recently watched a documentary that Oprah and Prince Harry put out on mental health, and they talked about different, you know, case studies of mental health issues. And there was someone, you know, some people that they put through a study where they tried every other treatment. They were, you know, they were at risk of taking their life, and they actually put them on microdoses of psilocybin, and that was when they actually start to, you know, see results. And it actually changed their whole treatment plan and their whole outlook on life. And, like, this stuff's life-changing.
No, completely. You know, I'm honored to have a life where I've seen it hundreds of times, like, change people, hundreds of people's lives, you know, in front of me. So it is some of the most beautiful things to see. Patterns that have been there for decades, or sometimes intergenerational, like, patterns that had been there that they've kind of born into a family system, sometimes go away in a day. I'd say the hardest part of my work is sometimes working with expectations, because sometimes the science looks so amazing and you hear, like, kind of the sense of a gospel from people, like, oh my God, this is so amazing, it's life-changing and transformative. But the truth is, like, there's no medication in the world that works 100% of the time for 100% of the people.
Yeah, true.
Right? And so the hardest part is people come in of, like, oh no, like, I'm at the end of my line, I want to kill myself, this better work. You know, I've seen this a lot, and it doesn't, for whatever reason. Maybe they need more treatments. We don't know. So that's the hardest part, is all the projections that come because it can be so amazing, but it doesn't guarantee that it will be for everybody. I love that you mentioned Prince Henry. You know, I've been seeing some stuff on him this last week, and the 60 Minutes episode that came out here in the U.S. this last week, you know, he had come out and said that psychedelic therapy had played a huge part in his healing process around the death of his mother, and then just healing from the kind of lifestyle that he had being royalty. So it's beautiful to see somebody, such a prominent figure right now, really coming out and really sharing his personal experience of how psychedelics have been very transformative and healing for him.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if I could add to that, it would be that I'm just glad to see someone with so much clout actually speaking about mental health, you know.
Huge. I know. I'm glad he's played a big role. He's been talking a lot about therapy. It's really been amazing to see.
Yeah. And so if someone's listening at the moment, Jahan, and, you know, they are having a tough time with anxiety and suicide ideation, and they don't know what to do next, and they don't know where to go, what do you reckon they should do?
Two parts come up for me. One is kind of more sharing some insights I've learned about anxiety and depression, so they can kind of begin to work on it right now in the present moment. And as far as psychedelic treatment, the really sad part is it's not completely accessible, largely because of the laws. And so even if somebody wanted to do this next month, you know, something that we did, we set up this retreat center in Jamaica, you know, Ottman Retreats. I'll be going out there in March. So it creates a safe legal place for people around the world to come and experience psilocybin. For a long time, Jamaica was the only place in the world where it was 100% legal. Somewhere like, you know, the Netherlands is like a gray zone, so they have some retreat centers there. Oregon here in the States just went legal this last January 1st. So just very, very recently, and they're setting up their infrastructure. we created, me and a group called Silo Health, created a free online 4-hour training to help people learn to sit for each other, to try to make it more accessible. So that's Silo Health, PSILO health.co. And you go to the videos and there's a free training that we put. So the hard part is, if you find a guide or a therapist, it'll cost a lot. Mm. And some people can't afford that, you know, and even if you have the money, they're hard to find.
Yeah,
you know, then the other option is retreat centers. Then there's this, the problem of sourcing the actual medicine itself. My friend Seth Warner created an online training to help people learn how to grow mushrooms themselves. So that's mycorrhizingfungi.com is his site. It's $400. He teaches you how to grow it. So that's one way. And then you need something either, I would recommend a safe person to do it with that has some level of training. So that there's a 4-hour training or somebody that's at least ventured with this before. So over the next few years, it's going to become a lot more accessible. There looks like FDA approval across the United States is going to happen this year. It'll still be hard to get to it because you have to be diagnosed with something and it's probably going to cost a lot, wow. You know, maybe like $10,000. But we're slowly in this way of really beginning to integrate this into culture. So 5 years from now, it's going to be a lot easier than it's ever been before.
Mm, and I guess, you know, if we were to reflect on, you know, the progress of things like, you know, marijuana and how far that has come in recent years, you know, like I was recently in LA and you can pretty much buy that on a street corner now, you know, and CBD oil and things like that is readily available almost here now in Australia. So it's like, you know, it is opening up. We are starting to see the benefits of these things, that they aren't just, you know, a particular class of drug. They actually can help us heal.
Mm-hmm. Tremendously. I think once there's a critical mass of approval, things shift very quickly. In my sense, it's already happened with psychedelics. The difference is it just takes a little bit to transfer into law. And once things transfer into law, it's almost you're getting the conventional established kind of consciousness of the society, getting its stamp of approval. Mm. And when that happens, things shift really quickly. You know, there's maybe 50% of humanity laws tied with like a kind of a moral dilemma, like an ethical dilemma. If something's illegal, it's bad. And so there's a lot of people that won't do things just because it's illegal, the government, or they think the medical society said so. And then other people are just scared to do something that's illegal, you know? And so we saw this with marijuana. As soon as it became legalized, you had a huge population that shamed it and judged it their entire life, suddenly go out and start doing it. Your grandparents, parents, people that just never would, are now buying like dummies and smoking at home. And everything is safe. They thought society would go crazy. Maybe society relaxed a little bit, but like nobody went off the rails.
They chilled out a bit more, didn't they? Now, if someone was to come and do one of your retreats, what kind of experience could they expect?
So in Jamaica, we do, you know, intake and screen calls. As the infrastructure begins to grow, you know, there will be retreat centers and clinics that can do more like high-level cases for with more extreme PTSD. But we need, because right now everything's still in the early stages, people that are somewhat stable. But 70-80% of people that come are suffering from depression. You know, some people are terminally ill cancer. Some people had their children died and they're dealing with deep grief. So people they come because they're initiated by normally a deep level of pain. After a screen call and looking through the application form to feel like it's a good fit for everybody, they land in Jamaica and we do a day of kind of prep work and kind of really setting the space for them to feel safe. Safety is like the fundamental kind of ground of all this kind of work. And so that also includes connecting with the rest of the group. They'll be in a cohort of about 12 people. Mm-hmm. And there'll be 3 facilitators, an organizer, and assistants. So there's 5 people on their team. There's 12 people. So there's a lot of time for really one-on-one interactions to help people really kind of settle in the space. After them doing some group work and relational exercises and getting to know each other, they're pretty tired. They just flew in from a different country. You know, they go to sleep. And in the morning, we wake up. I have one-on-one check-ins with everybody. We begin the group ceremony with psilocybin, you know, about 3 to 4 grams a person-ish, and then another booster, 1 to 2 grams. So we want them to get to a deep level where they're still feeling really safe and held in this experience. It'll go to, you know, maybe 7 hours of the actual ceremony. People tend to be very exhausted afterwards. So we'll have a small closing circle, dinner, rest, and then the entire next day is integration. So again, a kind of group kind of therapy environment and checking one-on-one to do therapy. And we're doing this like on a resort on the beach, like a private small resort. So they have a lot of space to go on and go to the ocean. They could journal, they could draw. We'll have some kind of art class up with integration. We'll dinner and then a bonfire. And then the next day, before they leave, we have a larger integration circle that's not encapsulating just the journey, but the entire 4 days. You know, so much of the healing process of these group ceremonies is actually the relationships. You know, people come for the psilocybin, but so much of our healing has to do with having this sense of belonging and community. That's where a lot of the trauma happened. It was through relationships. Mm. And so they tend to have this deeply healing, vulnerable experience with these 12 people. You know, years down the line, we see a lot of them just become close friends. You know, so they walk away of like, wow, I just felt a part of something really special, aside from having this really kind of one day transformative experience. And then we have a follow up call too to help them with the integration process once they get back.
That sounds incredible. God, sign me up. I'm in. Yeah, totally. And, you know, that's a theme I see a lot when I speak to a lot of therapists and doctors, is that, you know, community is a big part of healing, particularly, you know, when we're talking about things like mental health and addiction and things like that, is, you know, knowing you're not alone, and also having that safe space to be vulnerable and, you know, having someone else hold you in that space, I think, it's so important to actually, because if you were doing that all on your own, wouldn't work. I don't think it would work. No. So that is beautiful.
No, it is. I mean, community is a deep part, I think, of our future evolution, but I really kind of ground why it's so important in our past evolution. So much of my dissertation was on this idea that we evolved and became human because of a relationship with psilocybin mushrooms. You know, a relationship that started, you could say, about 5 billion years ago and ended to that level of extreme kind of relationship during the agricultural revolution, where we get to grow our own food and kind of disconnect from the, you know, wild food in nature. For example, mushrooms grow through spores. We couldn't plant them. They're not seeds. So it took a while for us. Mm. It's only during the 1970s that we learned how to grow psilocybin mushrooms. So they're kind of reentering into our consciousness. But if we look at primate evolution, we were primates for about 50 million years. You're just in these groups and packs, and they spend about 40% of the day grooming each other and touching and being in connection, right? And then for about 3 to 4 million years, as we were more, you could say, a hunter-gatherer-ish kind of society, we lived in groups of 75 to 150 people. So you're constantly in this pod your entire life. You don't have individual rooms. Most of the time, you're walking around naked with each other. And so that's how our psyche evolved. That's how our emotional heart evolved, to be part of this deep connected group in tribal culture. And it's very evolutionary recently that we've gone to such extreme individuality and really had our own. And it's not that it's bad. There's gifts that come with individuality. But now every person has their own rooms. And we're, you know, studies, at least here in the U.S., show that we're feeling more isolated than ever. Mm. And isolated leads to anxiety and depression and a sense of lower self-esteem and disconnection. And a deep sense of unhappiness. You know, what I've learned from these psychedelics is the main reason we exist is love. But we have 8 billion humans primarily to connect. And if that isn't happening, we're feeling deeply unfulfilled and unhappy. Mm. And not good. So these kind of blur our boundaries a bit. This kind of rigid egoic part of us that dissolves and keeps us disconnected. And our hearts begin to open more, which allows, you know, following deeper intimacy and connections with others.
Mm, absolutely. You know, I've been thinking, as you've been talking, and I probably should have asked you this in the beginning, but how did you get into all this?
No, great question. You know, it's been a fascination since 15. I mean, before I took psychedelics, I was like, what? You could take a compound and it changes your view of reality. So I was already kind of hooked. And then at 18, I had a life-changing psychedelic experience. I was an atheist, very kind of reductionist kind of scientific approach. And I had this experience of God, which I didn't think was possible. Like, this voice came of my consciousness, started talking to me, saying that we are love and we are eternal and we're all interconnected and love is the most important thing by a lot. Miles after that is learning, and everything is still insignificant compared to these values. Just don't even worry about them. And the feeling was of this deep, deep, deep bliss, and that this is like 110% real. It's the most real thing I ever experienced. And those few hours changed the course of my entire life, like from what I studied to the way I see myself in the world to what I read, completely different trajectory. They probably saved my life. I was suicidal and depressed at the time. Through the next 20 years, I went through a higher academia, getting my bachelor's and master's and doctor's, all focusing on consciousness. I hadn't come across a better method for transformation or something even close to as interesting. you know, that's either healing or introspective and has so much potential even for ideas and creativity to help us really problem solve some of the crises we have, that it seemed very worthy to devote my life to it, you know, several years ago, to just go all in. And it's been magic since, you know, as we shared before, it's like with you and this podcast, it's just been this immense state of effortless flow once I were kind of really surrendered to this path.
And that's, you know, the signal that you're on the right path, isn't it? Like that you are divinely guided to where you should be in the right place in the right time.
Totally. Absolutely. You know, it feels really good. It feels like staying in a state of more of like love. So it feels really great.
And I can totally feel that whilst I'm with you right now. Now, if people want to find out more and get in touch with you, where can they go?
Yeah, my website's psychedelicevolution.org. You know, I have a Facebook account people can follow, recently got an Instagram. And the book's out on all platforms. You know, it's Psilocybin Connection, and it's out as an audiobook too across all the platforms also, including Audible. And we have an incredible narrator, you know. So I've also been on maybe like 30 something podcasts this year. So if you go to my website, there's like such a long list of talks. Mm-hmm. It really kind of expands a lot of topics.
Amazing. Now, last big question for you. What's the change you'd like to see in the world, and how can we bring it to life?
You know, this is obviously, this gives me more hope than anything else. And you know, change and growth is a slow process. And I'm really glad this method of transformation really accelerates it by a lot. Left without it, you know, whether we look at different kind of transformative methods, whether it's meditation or even community work or prayer or just reading and thinking ideas through, they're very slow, just therapy. And we've had access to so many of these things for a long, long time. And this change has been somewhat minimal, important, but minimal. And we see when psychedelics entered in the 1960s to mass culture, there's massive revolutions, social revolutions for women's, for African Americans, against war, inspiration and creativity across all the fields. You know, you see breakthroughs through science. People have won Nobel Prizes given their attribute, their creativity to psychedelics. There's a lot of research that shows the computer revolution came from psychedelic experiences. You see it in all the arts and music and movies across all the fields. And that's because we had a small window where people were really using these things, and because of legality, it went away. So once it comes back, and because the science does not show how effective it is for therapy, I think it's very realistically that every city is going to have at least two therapy centers, psychedelic therapy centers, because there's nothing that is that effective. Like a lot of therapists right now are just working really hard to try to get trained. So I think there's a potential for massive change culturally in the next 5 years, and continuing 20 years from now, it's going to be accelerated a far more process. So unless people have the actual experience of these things, like deep, deep love and connection, then it just remains theoretical and people don't embody it. Mm. Once people see like, oh my God, you could feel this way and this level of care for everything, then I think things can change pretty dramatically and quickly.
Yeah. Wow. What a world. I'm looking forward to it. And you know, there's something there you've tapped into, and it just made me think, you know, I've noticed a lot recently in the last year that when we open up other parts of our brain, the change in creativity we can bring to the world, when we just give ourselves space to do that. And that's exactly what this does. And that's what you're talking about there. You know, like let's look at some of the big, you know, artists in history. You know, no doubt that was the impetus of some of the greatest songs that we've had in our history, you know. It's all part of opening up those other parts of our brain and our consciousness that, you know, allow us to let that flow through us.
No, well said. You know, even looking at the neuroscience to kind of describe what you shared, what we found out is psychedelics quiet what's called the default mode network. It's this network in the brain that scientists categorize as the ego sense of self. So when you think me, 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 I, this specific kind of neuronal network lights up. And it turns out when that quiets, it allows the larger symphony of the brain to kind of come up in the line. So the whole brain begins to interconnect. Mm. So this kind of, you could say, identity and kind of regular way of being acts as a repressive function for the rest of creativity. And when we kind of get out of the way, there's a plethora of just a large amount of creativity that just arises. You know, that whether it's sensations, whether it's archetypal images, whether it's intuitive insights, you know, your perspective on possibilities of how to live really enlarge. You know, and it's really tied to all the big spiritual traditions. Or like, well, if the ego quiets down, so much more is available. And not that the ego is bad, it's just we're kind of habitually stuck in that state.
Oh, wow. I could talk to you about this all day. Thank you so much for being a part of the ethical evolution. I have loved every single minute. Thank you.
Same here. It's very mutual. I've really enjoyed this also. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Ethical Evolution Podcast. If you're ready to be the change and would love to work with me on finding your voice through spiritual coaching or creating your own podcast with impact, visit ethicalchangeagency.com.
Have you ever wondered what actually happens in Congress every day? Stay informed on Capitol Hill's daily happenings with a concise, factual summary of the Senate and House of Representatives' activities from the previous session, free from bias, on the Congressional Record Daily Digest podcast. Subscribe on your favorite podcast platform and discover the process from the heart of U.S. politics. The Congressional Record Daily Digest, an Electricast production.
Today is working for me. Do you believe that for yourself? Hey, I'm Pastor Julie, and I want to empower you through encouragement, inviting you to my podcast, Big Truth Encouragement, where I unpack living a faith-filled life. I created my podcast for the ladies, but gentlemen, you'll gain something too. So I invite you to listen to Big Truth Encouragement on Electricast and any platform where you listen to your podcast.
Electricast. Electricast.